SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. A little bit of a unsettled morning, but it's there's no more rain in the forecast from what I can tell. There are races off the turf here today. In fact, one turf race on each course, the New York Stallion Series, Statue of Liberty. That'll stay on the eighth race. Three-year-old fillies going a mile on the inner. And then that heavy-duty allowance for boys going a mile and a 16th on the melon. Remember, you're a melon on the melon course. And that's a really cool group of horses, actually, with Ticonderoga, who always is tough and fires, and Aquaphobia. Falcone's done a terrific job with Aquaphobia. Really terrific job. And good old King Creesa, back with David Donk. It's a good group. Siding Spring returns after a long layoff, and so does Abenas, the French bred for Al Stahl. Good group. Team Colors in there for now with Diodoro off the claim, and Black Tide, who figures to be up on the pace. In fact, there's a few runners in there that want to be up near the front end. On the front end of the show this morning, and there's a carryover here, by the way. Let's get that in here. And races 4 through 9. You got a 60,000 plus carryover. And there's also a super high five carryover at Del Mar, thanks to the $40 horse that John White delivered to you on Tuesday. How about that? And John, the jackpot winner last night, Tina and I were otherwise engaged by the time the end was coming at Del Mar. We tried to do everything. We tried to complete the trifecta. We did pretty good. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But the nightcap and the whole sequence at Del Mar did prove to be as tricky as John White was suggesting. And John said he was going to go light and had the feeling that it might carry a second day. It didn't, because one player took it down and gets the jackpot bonus. As much grief as the jackpot bonus concept had when introduced, it actually is kind of, it's pretty cool. $432,000. And what's nice about it is, if you were the person that took this down, you deserve it. Yeah, you deserve not just the regular carryover prize, but a little extra bump, and that really is what the concept was. And that winner, and in fact the whole nightcap, where you had the 19-1 winner, Pacific Song, Alfredo Marquez, and Agapito Delgadillo, was vying with Sterling's Temple. And I'm not sure if Sterling's Temple, I'm not sure, I didn't see that, if Sterling's Temple was covered similarly to Pacific Song. But a 40-60 winner, and John, who may be listening, it's 6 a.m., and John traditionally, I'll get a text from him if he's listening, without a doubt. And John, we've already gotten a couple of thank yous, John. Our friend Steve Carlin, he rode your push on Pacific Song. All the horses that looked like the right ones and the players, none of them fired. None of them. I mean, the closest would have been, I guess, Blaze of Glory, Spend It. I mean, I threw Spend It in, but I wasn't covering Spend It on my pick four and pick six ticket. I tried. Well, Did You Get It? 7-2. Jonas was 11-2, and Blaze of Glory, who was a little under 3-1. But they didn't fire. But here came Pacific Song and Sterling's Temple. They were separated by a neck, and big balloons, as Harvey would say. The pick four paid $3,819. The late pick five paid $28,159. And, you know, the other horses in the sequence that we, you know, that we talked about with John, they were all, you know, very reachable. And including the best part, I think, for players that were making attempts, if you had certain ideas about a single, Laker Ball, who did not go favored, Jelly Bean Christine went favored, but Laker Ball demolished that maiden claiming group. Delgadillo there as well for Doug O'Neill. And Laker Ball could have been a lean. John had the right idea, saying you were, you know, if you could afford it, you were going to buy that heavy head allowance race, the feature, the seventh. You did need to buy it. And because Divisor was okay, I mean, they were all okay in there. Show Me Dilute, and basically Divisor, they ended up pulling away from the field, and it was down to the two of them, and Divisor, Phil D'Amato, and Agave, and Queen Bee. They win that feature, and Divisor, part of a tote board that you're not going to see too often. If you haven't looked at the prices, Paul Matisse and Duke are going to be with us on television on Sunday, and I may have to take this chart with me. River Echo goes favored at exactly 5-2. Kidmon was second choice at a dime over, 260-1. So just a tad over 5-2. But then you had the other four horses, 520, 530, 540, 540. Four horses basically at 9-2. Two horses at 5-2. Maybe some of the computers blew a fuse with this, because this was, as advertised, a very strange set of horses and very tricky. So buying that race and getting 1280 on Divisor, that worked out all right. Laker Ball was 760. I mean, the two horses that you probably wanted to use, and those two that I went that way, I went 710. And you got the two of them around. Marjorie E, I was not crazy about. Marjorie E was okay. I was a little miffed because I bet a little bit dangerous and kind of leaned pretty good on a little bit dangerous for Cassidy, and can't be disappointed. She ran terrific, was making up ground late at a big price at 16-1. And kind of did okay in that race, because I keyed off of a little bit dangerous, you know. But 4-5 Mongolian Window, Marjorie E, basically stalking and ran that one into the ground. Snaked, you know, Snaked was okay. I wasn't in love with Snaked. I made one mistake when we were talking with John. Shanghai Tootsie caught my eye, the Pennsylvania bred. And then when I built the tickets, I ended up getting enamored with a couple of other horses. And then, of course, Shanghai Tootsie ran very well at 17-1. But it was Snake that graduates for Steve Knapp and the Bierman Family Trust, Greg Hall and Say J Racing. And my grandmother's family, actually, I've seen this racing stable. My my father's family are Biermans, as it happens. Should look into, yeah. My grandmother was Gertrude Bierman, and her brother Hans. You know, it's funny. those generational names, Gertrude and Hans. you don't get a lot of Gertrude and Hans's anymore. Maybe in certain parts of Austria and Germany. And the whole sequence started out with Hartel, who at 2-1 was a good lean, and the interest in truck salesman, he was okay, but Hartel for Peter Miller and the Hartunian team. So a big payday at Del Mar. The fur flew, and the remnant from yesterday, no two-day carryover, but there is a very big pick five carryover for people to focus on today. If you want to look at that eighth race, maybe we'll do it with Rich Ang later on. Not sure if we're going to save Quigley for tomorrow or not. We'll see. We'll see about, because I forgot to reach out to Tom, and he's not the earliest of risers, Quigley. So that was Del Mar yesterday, which was really worth looking at, and I hope some of you capitalized on the variety of opinions. Gus and I both offered up opinions on the website, and those of you that took notes with John, and if you closed out with Pacific Song, you had to be thrilled. So great job by John. Right here, Saratoga, this was a funny day, I thought. And it, you know, started out very formful, and you know, any of the horses that you might have used. And then things got a little squirrely in the middle portion. And some like it hot brown. That maiden win, this was a big brown colt that you could see moving. You could see him moving and moving with alacrity, and took over and trounced that maiden field. And it was a group that had, you know, some interesting firsters, but it was all some like it hot brown. Tis Now Smile. This was where the pick six carryover, the seeds were planted, and I'm sure that some like it hot brown, a big help on the carryover front for Saratoga. But how about Tis Now Smile, Mrs. Pale Angeli and Charlie Baker somehow gets the Lady Bergen in the last jump, and that was stunning. Lady Bergen looked absolutely home after shrugging off Baby Boss in a long duel. I mean, they went 22-3, 45-4, 58-2, and it took just enough starch out of the 3-2 favorite. And Joel Rosario with a $42 winner. Rosario fans, Rosario is the on the bandwagon, off the bandwagon type of a jock. People cash Joel and then get annoyed, but he's good often. Cape Angel became the first two-time winner from the meet at the meet. There was great consternation when Joe Sharp brought Cape Angel back just a couple of weeks ago at the start of the meet. People couldn't figure it out. Well, maybe the horse is in good form. I guess that's what it is. Back to back wins and trying to become the voodoo dancer of 2018 with authority. And there's a lesson there. In fact, there's a horse running back today. Yeah, this horse is starting to, you know, run back from just a few days ago. Keep that in mind. JJ's Dreaming drowned speak. I thought you needed both. Seth was right about JJ's Dreaming, maybe singling. Mark Hennig might have one today that looks live. And then, but there is just nobody that sets up turf sprint opportunities like Jason Service. I would say Arno Delacour, who's got huge numbers with turf sprinters, but Service, who does well in most areas, but when he focuses on the turf sprints, I mean, it's just unbelievable. 30% plus, but the most important part of it is what he did with World of Trouble and putting him on the grass for the quick call. Had to negotiate the one hole, but Arad Ortiz, after the break, took over and never looked back. And I mean, he, on paper, he was quote unquote, you know, fastest. It didn't take a lot to sniff him out. You had to basically make a decision about the turf with him. And no problem. And then, of course, Service ran 1-2 because he had Fig Jelly, who was okay. I tried Dirty. Little under 4-1, ran okay. The horse that ran well was Totally Boss, and from a tough post from the 12. And Rusty Arnold has his horses are running well. Keep your eye on Rusty, who of course is very tricky and will find the winner's circle here without fail, and likely at a price. And that got to the nightcap, and Wild Colonial Boy, who just looked overwhelming in here, an easy winner. So, I mean, there were places to really lean yesterday, but there were just a couple of spots that, you know, that kind of up-jumped the devil type results. But it was a fun day yesterday. And then it gave way to the evening, which was mayhem. There was Pete Fornatale and Jonathan Kinchin. Congratulations to them and everybody involved in the World Horse Player Tour TV debut, the pilot, a smashing success. It was really fun. Hope it goes where Pete and Jonathan are hoping, because it was beautifully done, well received. While that was going on in the Humphrey Finney Pavilion, Cherie DeVoe and David and Gordo celebrating their marriage with a wonderful assortment of family members and friends and racetrackers, and spent most of the evening with John Sheriffs and Dottie and Gordo. John told some stories never heard. And then it was on to the Washington Inn, Ann's Washington Inn, where Michael Blowen was holding court. Barbara Livingston and everybody with old friends. So it was a festive Wednesday night giving way to a big Thursday. Let's take a quick break. We'll set up the show when we get back.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Races 20 minutes into Thursday, and we've got a lot of the Thursday activities that are standard and have been around for virtually from the start of ATR. Tony Black in a little bit, Steve Haskin, who is still in town. Haskin has taken up residency. It's like one of those visiting chairs at a university. Was it the man who came to dinner or not leaving? Haskin staying around. You know, tonight there's a lovely concept. Saul Kumin is having a Lady Eli dinner, and everybody involved, almost everybody, and so Steve was invited to that, and he's going to partake, he and Joan, before they head home. But we'll talk to Steve, and like I said, to Rich Eng later. We'll look at that eighth race at Del Mar that's going to have the big super high five carrier. Maybe today's a good day to try to poach the pick five and get involved in that. Dick Powell, we owe Dick a visit, and we'll get Dick actually writing up a middle portion of the Saratoga season blog slug at Twin Spires. So we'll get some of Dick's Saratoga thoughts, but we'll also look at what's going on at Presque Isle. And we're going to talk to Joe Applebaum momentarily. Joe's going to join us, and typically we've had Joe to talk about his contest play, which is outstanding, and he's got a Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge skin to attest to that, as well as his New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association hat taking over there. But it's actually as a breeder that we're going to talk to Joe, because the New York Breds take over. They're filling in probably as we speak. Vans arriving at the sales grounds. The yearlings from Monday and Tuesday being sent off to new homes or back to their home if they RNA'd or so forth. And the New York Breds are filling up the barns. And Saturday and Sunday night, another round of sales activity. If you didn't go to the select sale, you can take part with the yearling sale of the New York Breds. But Joe has got his operation off the hook. And we're going to talk about regional breeding programs and the incentive programs. They're running the New York Stallion Series race They've been feathered in, you know, the last couple of days, and the Statue of Liberty today. I want to talk about the nuance or the difficulty between sending mayors to Kentucky, something that we did, frankly, to get the Macho Uno, Carlisle Bell, who turned in a bullet the other morning that was eye-popping, apparently. I couldn't be there, but 47 flat bullet without ask. In the meantime, we're trying to find a race for it. Can't having trouble getting a spot for it. But you know, we sent Ausable to Kentucky and to Edina Springs. So Joe's going to talk about that versus the New York Stallions. And there's, you know, there is a divide, obviously, between a, you know, the Stallions that stand in the state and, you know, sending your mayor out to Kentucky or even potentially, I suppose, Maryland and so forth. But Joe will talk about it, and he breeds in New York and in Florida. So we'll talk to Joe Applebaum in just a little bit, and let me quickly get in a call. George checking in. George, good morning.
How are you, Steve?
Excellent.
Listen, I just want to, you know, after 55 years in this business, I finally saw something I never saw before. If you look at the one of the early races at Arlington today, there's a maiden claiming race. You got a 10-year-old maiden in there.
I heard about this. Somebody said, and you know, there was the, wasn't there the 10-year-old the other day, last week, that was a maiden winner in West Virginia, and I think the trainer's first win.
Yeah, well, this one I've never seen. This one hasn't run like in 7 years or something like that. But I've been following Arlington a lot this year for the first time in many years, and I've been doing pretty good there. And the reason that I've been doing pretty good, I've been following Sophie Doyle. Sophie has been tearing them up at Arlington. I mean, if you look at her record there, she's winning at least one race a day there. And she's really coming to her own riding on that poly track. She doesn't waste an inch of ground. You know, she rides that like a pro. And I don't know if you've been watching Arlington, but she's been bringing in some nice prices there, and she's been doing really good there. So let's hope she's on her way to getting to where her brother is.
Well, there was a thing yesterday, actually, I saw. There was a tweet yesterday with Sophie, and I saw it fleetingly. But no, she can ride. Nobody's going to question that.
Well, she went through a lot of lean times until she finally got into this groove. So I hope it continues, because she's a really nice person. You should get her on one day and talk to her.
Absolutely, we will. You know, and on that topic, the full fields for Arlington Million Day came together, and there are the usual interesting imports that are going to take swings. And
I think Mark has got a horse. Mark Johnson has got a horse coming over that Sylvester D'Souza is going to ride, a horse named Nylanta.
Yeah, there's
that horse should be really interesting to watch.
That's Niletti, who took the two-hole in the Beverly Ding.
Yeah, let's hope it's not like the last one he brought over. He brought Permian last year, and Permian had to be destroyed on the racetrack. So all right, well, have good luck, my friend. Take care.
George, always fun. Let me get a quick call in our friend John in New York, too. John, good morning. We'll switch over. We'll get John in here. John, hey. No, Case? There he is. Hey, John.
How you doing, Steve?
We're good. How's your meet?
Good. George Weaver only has one win so far.
I know.
Still get into the double digits?
It's going to be tough now. It's going to be tough.
Sheila Rosenblum had her Labrador Philly by the dad of the Dior the other night at the sale. And how much does it cost to go to the dad of the Dior? $150, $200?
Yeah.
She was offered $775, and it wasn't enough.
No, she RNA'd.
Seems like that was a pretty good price.
Well, it's tough enough for her to even have offered up that horse, and I think she has, I'm going to assume, the mindset that if she didn't get a million, that she wasn't selling. And you can argue that things fall off quickly. In fact, I'll bring this up next with Joe Applebaum. You could argue that the pedigree drops off very quickly after La Verdad, and you know, 775 should have been enough. But it's a personal decision. It's one of those things that, you know, she's got a number, and if she wasn't going to get it, she'll press on with her. She could campaign her or sell her, try again, you know, later in the year or as a two-year-old in training.
I mean, if you owned that horse, would you have taken the $500-some-thousand profit?
Probably. But there's, you got to understand, John, she is so emotionally attached. I understand. But at the same time, as we talk so often with any breeding conversation, there comes a point where you can't just bleed money. You do have to, you got to bring some more in. So they're tough decisions. That's part of the challenge in this business.
This guy, Michael Dubb, he seems to be extremely bright. I mean, he looks like one of the few owners in this game that actually makes money.
He's very sharp. His claims, he picks them out. If they don't measure up, he drops them, doesn't waste time or money trying to fix them if there's nothing there. Michael Dubb is savvy. He's got a very supportive set of partners that, you know, follow his lead with him, and the results speak for themselves.
One more thing. Todd Fletcher. You know, I watch TVG, and I watch the show from Saratoga. When Todd Fletcher debuts a horse on the turf, it is an extremely low percentage play. And I see constantly them people pushing his horses. I mean, the last time I looked, I think he was like 5 for 83.
No, fair point.
People start looking at these statistics.
No, agreed. Agreed. There was the one at the beginning of the meet that ran very well from a difficult post. But, no, that's a fair point.
I mean, and they get over bet because it's Fletcher. He's a first time starter, so he goes off at 5-2, 3-1. But they rarely win.
Take advantage, and go elsewhere.
Okay, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Always, John. Good to hear from you. John's the greatest. John is the quintessential grousing player that we live. John's been on the march for years, and I enjoy hearing from him because he tracks horses religiously. He knows where every two-year-old is coming out of the sales, and he's got an angle, and he plays it, and that's what it takes, hard work. When it comes to hard work, Joe Applebaum, second to none, and Joe didn't have enough hats between horse player and breeder. He added the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association title as well. We've talked about that. We've talked about his Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge win and his contest play. Today, we welcome him as a breeder and as a bloodstock trader. Joe, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Excellent. Excellent, Joe, and thought it was a great opportunity. You know, so many of the visits we've had have been more toward the current state of affairs, NYTHA and so forth, and we had the post-Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge success visit, but with the sale Saturday and Sunday, I wanted to call on you and talk about your breeding operation and pluck some insights ahead of Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, well, it's exciting. They have Phasic Tipton 7, their sale Saturday and Sunday nights, and it's for the kind of premier New York bred yearlings. And even though I'm not selling anything in the sale, I primarily sell as a two-year-old I'll probably be doing some shopping there, as we always like to fill in our ranks of runners or even horses potentially to sell next spring. It's an exciting time for New York breeders. As the people listening may or may not know, breeding is a real long game. You spend a lot of time fretting over your broodmare and their health, and then you hopefully have a baby and the foal and how they grow up, and most of your foals often aren't worth much, and then you get one that is worth a lot, and you hope to be rewarded for that in the marketplace.
Give an overview, Joe, before we talk specifics and mm-hmm. and some themes in breeding and how to how to pick and choose your spots. Talk about how you got into the breeding at all. And
okay.
Because that's a story.
Yeah, so we started years ago, over 15 years ago, buying horses just to, we claimed some horses, and then we went to the yearling sale. It must have been back in 2002 or 2003, and we bought a siphon filly with the intent that we would race her. We really were just fans and a bunch of guys having fun. And so we found this filly we liked. We purchased her at the yearling sale. And we got a call. I got a call from Nick Demerick in December of that year. He said, "Hey, we think we should sell this horse." My first reaction was, "Oh, no, she's that bad. You want to get rid of her?" He says, "No, quite the opposite. She's that good, and we think you can sell it and make a lot of money." And I didn't really know much, and my partners knew even less, about selling horses as two-year-olds. But we trusted in Nick and my then-trainer, now current partner, Carlos Morales. And that filly wound up selling at the Keeneland two-year-old sale, which hasn't existed for a while, but it's making a comeback. 2019, apparently. We sold her for $500,000, which was a mighty big surprise and kind of launched us into the world of pinhooking, of buying at the yearling sales with the intent to resell. Now, we did that for a while, but what's morphed over the last couple years is we really used Ocala Stud as a model. And we've developed some brood mares, both from fillies we've taken off the track that we think have had potential or have the right physical. And we've also filled in with some broodmare prospects and broodmares that we purchase at auction or often claim broodmares that have good pedigrees but may be running for less money than I think they're worth. And right now we have about 20 broodmares in New York, and we birth the babies up here. After about 5 or 6 months, they get weaned. We send them to our facility in Ocala, Florida, where they are developed until they're two-year-olds, and then we make a decision whether to sell them or to race them. And the interesting thing with that is because they're New York breds, and because we're obviously here in New York at the track all the time, it makes a lot more economical sense for us than if they were New York breds.
And explain that portion, because the incentive ends that are involved.
There's a couple of things. So the New York bred programs, as I assume as most of your listeners know, have a separate class of races, right, which are very competitive, but not quite as competitive as the open races here. So you usually have your maiden special weight, you have a non-winners one, a non-winners two race to get through. So not only is it an opportunity to earn, but, and I think this is really important, developmentally for the young horses, it's a great opportunity for them to develop in a less stressful environment, which allows them then to compete in the open ranks more successfully. So a great example of that was a horse we bred in partnership with Tom Coleman, was Zevo. So Zevo went through his New York bred conditions, won some New York bred stakes, then was eligible to run in the open conditions as he got older. And then his four-year-old year, I think he won like seven in a row. If he had been forced into the open races right away, maybe he does it, but, you know, maybe the stress of that also makes it more difficult, and he never gets a chance to develop into a good older horse. And that's one of the great advantages of the New York bred program. You see so many older horses still running that are New York breds. And I think that's a real key issue for us in this game is how do we keep horses running until they're older? It gives trainers more stock to train. It gives owners more utility, more value from their purchases or from their breeding. And the New York bred program's been really helpful in that way.
Very much. And the opportunity to campaign some and I suppose campaign the ones that you come home with after the two-year-old sales. Talk about the distribution of sales prospects. We just came off of a sale where there were some very notable weanling to yearling pinhooks. On that landscape, Joe, when buyers are considering a place to, you know, build inventory, what mm-hmm. do you foresee as their best opportunity? I suppose it depends on everybody's individual philosophy, but survey that landscape in terms of when the offerings come and how people should look at them.
Well, I think that's exactly right. What you just said, Steve, you got to assess yourself and your temperament and what you're looking to do, right? So if you're going to breed a horse, you're talking about 3 or 4 years until you're going to see that horse run. So the auction markets where you can buy weanlings typically over the winter of their weanling year, of the year of birth, or even into the what they would call a short yearling. Those would be the January and February sales of their yearling year. You know, you still have a fairly long time horizon. And then you have the yearling sales, which start typically in July at Fasig in Kentucky and stretch through October of their yearling year. And then you have the two-year-old sales, which occur in the spring, March, April, May, and even now June, of their two-year-old year. And a lot of it is what your temperament is and how you want to get to the races and how long you want to have your hands on the horse. So for my partner and I, we decided a few years ago that having our hands on the horse for as long as possible made a lot of sense. So hence the breeding. And we've done more and more business in the weanling markets, buying very young horses and developing them on our farm. So, you know, and I would like to actually correct a misperception that many buyers have, and I think this can be helpful to people. Let's say a lot of clients will tell me, Joe, I want to race in Saratoga. So what do I need to do? And typically people think you need to go to the two-year-old sale to race in Saratoga because the horse is in training. But often, and I'm a two-year-old seller, so I think it's a great place to buy a racehorse, but often it's hard to get two-year-olds ready to run because the best thing to do with your two-year-old coming out of a two-year-old sale is to give them a little time off. So often you want to go for younger horses, yearlings or weanlings, so that they're ready to run in Saratoga. Because often coming out of March or April, the horses need a little breather. And if you want to be long-term positive or long-term greedy, as Goldman Sachs might say, you're probably better off giving them a little break coming out of the two-year-old sale.
Yeah, and I've had that conversation with trainers, and some of them like to go right on with them. Others do like to, you know, let the air out of the balloon a little bit and then build them back up. And you know, some of them can come off the pre-show sales a little frazzled and, you know, so let them kind of decompress. That's a very much an individual kind of a decision that horsemen can make, you know, just based on the the way that horses are acting, too. I mean, if they're...
100%. Right. Every horse has different temperament and different abilities. And, you know, what you see with the best trainers is that they can alter their program to meet their individual needs.
I want to talk about New York Stallions versus sending mares out to get covered and then foaling within the state. And certainly at a sale like Saturday and Sunday, you know, that divide is going to be very evident. But before we get to that, Joe, what do you recommend for people that have either an interest or are getting involved already, and they sense that they'd like to get into this portion of the industry, and more or less, you need to, as you explained, you need partners, whether they're financial partners or people you rely on for, you know, their guidance and their advice and the counsel. This has been an area where the industry, and certainly Jess Jackson, made a very big issue of this in terms of having integrity and a, you know, a measure of confidence in the people in which you reach out to. And how do you suggest people wade into this to get involved on that front if they're going to keep a couple of mares and try to, you know, try to build a broodmare band?
So I would say, you know, often owners are accused that, put this way, if you have the means to buy a horse, you've obviously done pretty well in business. You're probably a fairly sophisticated operator in a business setting. Now, owners too often have been accused of checking their common sense at the stable gate, right? And I think that's important for people not to do that. So you would want to use all the skills that you use in your regular business life in the same thing, right? So the first skill is that you need to hire good people. You need to interview people. You need to talk to them, get a sense of them, both as business people and as human beings. And be it a vet is really important. Be it a bloodstock agent, if you're going that route, or working with a trainer. And I think that's really important. I think, to quote Ronald Reagan, you want to trust but verify. You know, these are markets. These are people. You know, these are auction markets, not unlike the art market or the car market or livestock markets. And, you know, buyer beware, and you need to do your research and do your homework and work at it. And, you know, you want to trust the people you hire, but always keep an eye to make sure they're doing the right things, and just be professional about it. If you're blasé and you just sign checks without checking the bills or thinking things through or double checking on people, you know, those are the same mistakes you probably wouldn't make in your own business. You shouldn't make them here.
Well, and that has been a, you know, an area that has confounded a lot of people who wade into the industry, and they expect that they're going to be successful because they've been successful in other walks of life. But there's so many acts of God and vagaries that come to, you know, come to bear in this, and that includes frustrations that will, you know, really test people's resolve, and that includes foals that don't survive, accidents and mishaps, and you know, the timing of the marketplace, placement in a book. I mean, one breeder's or consigner's bad luck may be a buyer's good luck. At OBS this past June, by day three, most of the New York buyers had left, and there were a lot of New York breds that became available, you know, minutes after the sale ended, because there wasn't the right amount of consumers there to take them home, and that became a buying opportunity.
And I bought one myself at OBS June, just with those thoughts in mind. The prices seemed a little soft. There was a New York Red that we had liked and wasn't looking like he was bringing the value that that we thought he should have. So we bought one just, you know, under those circumstances. Look, it's a tough game, and the heartbreak and the thrills are go hand in hand, right? If it were easy and everyone was successful all the time, the wins and the victories or the high sales, depending on what you do, wouldn't be as interesting or thrilling. And people should be prepared for that, because you'll get it all here. It's a full view of life, especially when you're in the breeding and young horse development game. I've had the horse die from a poisonous snake bite. I've had triumphs of breeding and then selling as a 2-year-old Fapien, and they go hand in hand. So it's a wild ride.
No doubt. And you had one of those roller coaster top of the landscape moments back in April. 600 and change a score,
yep,
right? In April.
Yep. We've been really fortunate. We sold a Big Giants Causeway colt to Phoenix Thoroughbreds. He's out training with Doug O'Neill in California now. I gave him one race, kind of going short on the turf, but we think he's going to really stretch out and develop. So we sold some other ones. We sold a bunch of cross traffics. We're somehow partial to cross traffic. But I know there's a couple floating around out there that look pretty good.
Let's talk about the stallion decision making. And you go through the catalog, and for Saturday and Sunday, and there's there's really the same kinds of storylines that we talked about going into Monday and Tuesday, and that includes big name first crop stallions, including we had Mrs. Nielsen yesterday, Joe. I couldn't miss the opportunity to congratulate her on the $1 million seller, and she's got this American Pharoah filly, Hip 329, that she's very excited about. There's Honor Codes, there's the other first crop names, but then there's Joe McMahon with Central Banker, who seems to be catching a wave. Any other number of New York stallions? Talk about that parallel track, basically.
Well, first, I think everyone in New York is just so thrilled for Mrs. Nielsen, because she just, she spent a lifetime devoted to breeding in this state. So I've never seen so many people happier for another breeder. So that's the first thing, is wonderful. I think people need to understand what the reality of the commercial markets are. And there's a lot of money invested by a lot of people in these first crop sires. And they come off the track and, they get bred to a lot of good mares. And this is everyone's opportunity to put your best foot forward, right? This is, you only get one chance to make a first impression, and this is it for these guys. I think what you see, right, in New York is we have a lot of workmanlike stallions who get horses. I mean, Freud being the king, but we have other good ones like Giant Surprise and a couple others. And you see these horses, and you get runners here at New York. The question, for the breeders is do they draw the prices? And they don't draw the prices that the Kentucky sires do, mostly because the Kentucky sires are more expensive and people invest more money in them. So it's not crazy that they bring more in the auction market. So,
no,
but
no.
That's a decision, right? Like, as you're a buyer, you have to make that choice. Well, if you're breeding to Freud or Central Banker or or anyone here in New York, your Breeders' Awards are so much more. Not your Breeders' Awards, but the Breeders' Awards are so much more. The Open Company Racing Awards are more. They're double. So, you know, could you get in at a lower price point, which is good? And will your bonus on track be more than if you bought a Kentucky Sired New York bred? So these are all the considerations you need to make. You maybe feel you're giving up the dream, right, because you don't have a fancy sire. But then again, I'll go back to Zevo. He was sired by True Direction. He was a wonderful runner, ran a 117 buyer, right, winning the fall high weight here, but wasn't a commercial stallion. So, you know, there's an opportunity to get in on these guys at a lower price point with the added opportunity of higher racing awards down the road. You know, it's up to each buyer to kind of balance that with, you know, the fancier, shiny pedigree and what makes sense for them.
You've obviously had those decisions to make, and with a $600,000 Giants Causeway, there's an example of, you know, a system or a decision-making process that, you know, that pays for mistakes. I mean, how do you balance the variety, and do you consider yourself, you know, completely commercial when you're making, you know, your decisions and, you know, planning out, you know, what you're gonna breed and what you're gonna offer?
Well, we want to be balanced, right? Obviously we sell everything. Everything is always for sale at some point. It's all dependent on the price. But if you want to hit home runs, you're going to need a certain level of sire power to do that. So you want to have enough of that, but you want to do it in a cost-effective and business-like way. Not unlike value investing in stocks versus momentum investing. I would say we are value investors or value sellers, we hope, where we're looking for sires who have enough pedigree power, but also produce on the racetrack. And I think that's something people should really look at, the statistics about who's producing, who's getting runners, what's their stakes percentage, what's their AEI. There's all sorts of statistics out there that people can search for. And that's really where we try to find the sweet spot between horses that or stallions that, you know, that we can afford, but also produce on the track. Because, yes, we want to sell, but we race plenty. And if we are racing them, we want to have someone who has a track record. So for us, I'll give you an idea, we're typically swinging in the, let's say, $15,000 to $25,000 stud fee range, because we find that's a sweet spot where you can get plenty of good runners there, but you're not priced so high that if things don't work out, that, you know, you're in big trouble.
How much do you spread when it comes to first crop that may offer some of those potential values in terms of that price range versus proven stallions that, you know, that should have a certain, you know, range of return?
Well, it's funny you say that. So my partner and I always tend to favor the more proven stallions that I think we can buy at a value. My partner always is pushing for first crop sires because they are more commercial. They're harder to get to. They usually have a little bit higher price point because of the supply and demand issue. So we always try to evaluate one or two first crop sires that we think have some potential. We probably admired them as runners. We inspect them to make sure physically that they can stand up and hopefully throw a certain level of size, because in the commercial markets, you know, size is extremely important. I always wonder how much that translates to the racetrack. I haven't seen a good study of that, but to have a tall, physically imposing horse is critically important in the auction markets.
Joe Applebaum is with us, and Joe, of course, the horse player and the head of the NYFA, and when it comes to his breeding and sale operation Off the Hook, has had great success and has got a proven track record, and that's part of the equation for buyers too, Joe. There's people who get a reputation of having either developing a good horse or breeding a good horse, and natural relationships get forged, over the course of time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, we take great pride in the fact that we've sold a lot of good horses, that when people come to our consignment, that they know that they're getting horses ready to race. My partner has won over 1,000 races at the track, including the Met Mile with Yankee Victor. So trainers know when they come there that, he has the background and the development necessary for horses to get ready. And, we bought as weanlings recently El Deal, who won a grade one up here last year, Cepesa, who won a grade one at Keeneland. We had Informed Decision. That was probably one of our first big ones. It was an Eclipse Award winner. So, you forge relationships with the buyers of these horses, and they learn to trust in you, and you can have honest conversations with them and try to meet their needs, because each buyer is a little different. They have different clients. They race in different jurisdictions. Some want to race on the turf. Some want to race on the dirt. Some like sprinters. Some only want colts. Others are trying to build up their broodmare bands. So we're constantly working with the buyers and their agents, trying to meet their needs with the best possible horse.
A couple of market condition questions, Joe. And this came up, in fact, last night. I had a discussion about this, that given what looks to be increased market demand, do you sense that mares are being sought after or being put back into service, or that are going to add to broodmare bands to swing the pendulum back, I think, into a scenario where we've got more horses really to bring to market? And it certainly feels this way.
Yeah, I would guess not, to be honest.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing in the markets is incredibly high demand for the most sought-after offerings. So the horses that everyone wants are selling for phenomenal levels. And however, we have the same issue in the auction markets that we have at the racetrack, is we've lost a cadre, and it dates back all the way to the financial crisis, I think. We've lost the cadre of what I would call mid-market owners. And so while the top of the market's very healthy, and let's call it the value end of the market is productive, I think that core middle market is lacking in buyers and lacking in owners. And so until you see that, until you see more sales and a rising median, not necessarily average, I just don't see a ton of broodmares going back into production. Now, we'll see broodmares come here to New York, as we've seen over the last 7 or 8 years. We've grown our broodmare population because it's healthy here in New York, and things are going well, but that's typically at the expense of another state. I don't know that we're going to see a lot more broodmares, put into service. That would be my guess, but, it's the market, so it'll tell us over time.
Joe, how long did it take? I mean, when you start out as a horse player and then move in this direction, how long did it take for you to gain confidence in your own opinion of a horse from a physical standpoint, in terms of learning conformation and, you know, understanding the dynamics, the physical dynamics. Talk about that learning curve.
So I would say it probably took me a good 10 years to feel somewhat confident. And even to this day, I bring in any opinion I can find. I really feel that more eyes on the horse is better. And, you know, one of the great things about this game is that it's like it's lifelong learning. You're always learning something new. You're always confronted with a new situation. You're always, like, interested in a new set of circumstances. And we, I would say that's clearly the case in this game. So I'd say it took me a good 10 years to really track and follow, and that's looking at like hundreds and hundreds of horses every year, if not thousands. It's hard to count sometimes. And learning what's important, what other horsemen feel or some of the traits and attributes that they want, or issues that are hard for them to deal with, and, you know, what issues can be overcome, what issues are really deal breakers. And a lot of it is like ruling out, right? Not ruling in. Everyone talks, oh, what a magnificent animal. Well, often, many of them are magnificent looking, almost all of them actually. But a lot of times it's ruling things out based on, you know, small imperfections that can cause trouble down the road.
What's a pitfall or an area that of common mistake that people make along the way on that front?
Well, I mean, I would say, and this is coming from like where we are is in our, I would say, you know, people rely far too much on pedigree and not enough on physical. And that's changed dramatically to the better over the last 25 years. But I still think, you know, once you're out of the womb and once you're actually operating as your own individual, like, judge me on myself, not on who my parents are.
I love it. I love it. All right, Joe, this will be a fun couple of nights. The momentum from the sale Monday, Tuesday, the last few years especially, have really buoyed the New York program. And plenty of people, you know, came away empty-handed Monday and Tuesday. And so now they're gonna peruse this catalog. And should be another good horse sale, as Boyd Browning will say.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun. If you're near Saratoga, come on out. If you're not, watch online. I think, you know, it's great fun and excitement. It's not for the timid, so understand that. But if you're interested, get involved. You'll never have a better time in your life.
Joe, one final thought, because I'm going to bring up Virginia for a second. And do you take advantage of some other regional programs that can augment the horse's value?
We probably should be better at that. We do have some mares. As you know, I have a operation in Ocala, so we do some stuff in Florida. You know, some of the programs like Virginia and Delaware, we should probably be taking better advantage of. But quite honestly, it gets a little confusing, and I get, you know, I'd rather just have the horses down in Ocala and where my guys have their hands on them all the time. So I don't. So we don't really do it as much as we should.
Well, I bring up the Virginia certification program, 6 months in Virginia before a horse turns three, and you get the 25% bonus before a horse turns two. So, you know, a yearling could be developed and young horse weanling, and you get certification and bonus, 25% purse bonus running in New York, I mean, among other Northeast states. I mean, the regional opportunities, we drive this home, you know, it just, it's outstanding. And New York, you know, being the program that really has been an example for the rest of the country, as evidenced by the Whitney exacta of
exactly. No, it was a great day for New York, a great day of racing. Let's be honest. You know, Diversify is really putting it together, and his performances have been dominating recently. And Mind Your Biscuits on the stretch out. I know there are a lot of naysayers, but you got to give the horses due. He tried to run down a loose on the lead dominant favorite and really ran well. So it was great to see.
Absolutely. And Joe, I appreciate it. Are you playing in the contest Friday, Saturday?
I am not, actually. I kind of feel I'm on the Naira board now, and even though I'm technically allowed to play in the contest, I feel like it might not be the best optics, as they say.
No, it's fine. It'd be all right. Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, though, right? You're not going to miss that.
I will definitely be at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and we'll be thrilled to take everyone's money there.
Joe Applebaum, everybody, Off the Hook is the breeding and sales business that Joe has really made into a big success, and you know, one of the reliable resources out there, and you can reach Joe easily anytime. Off the Hook and JA Goods on Twitter. If you aren't following Joe, you should be. Joe, thanks so much.
Steve, always a pleasure, and thanks for having me on.
Not at all. I thought that this would be a valuable opportunity to, you know, kind of talk about the workings, and there's so many people that are trepidatious about getting involved because it is a business that is unlike any other, and having partners and having people that you trust and whose opinion you respect while you gain an understanding is just vital. And there's going to be, make no mistakes, there's going to be some blind alleys and some some setbacks, and it's one of the reasons that we've tried to do what the little bit of everything. Have bought a weanling, and that turned into Ausable, a Chasm, and then we bred her, and we've bought yearlings and had mixed success. Have had disasters, frankly, and then had horses go on and be successful and win. Got this set of 2-year-old in training, first 2-year-old in training purchases, and we've claimed and tried to breed and learned that it just don't have the wherewithal for it, and that it's just too fraught. If you're not able to take, frankly, not just financial hits, but also emotional, because you lose a baby, it's about as devastating. You put so much into it. You pick a stallion, you get them mated, you confirm they're in foal, and you so look forward 10 and a half months, and then there's this little bundle of joy that is so magical to watch, and whether they contract something, rotococcus, in the case of two that we've lost, one in Florida and one in New York, or anything else. There's so many different ways. Dr. Alday, of course, has explained some of the challenges of getting a healthy foal. And then when they start to train, the setbacks there. I mean, it you have to have an understanding of what, as Joe laid out, what your personality and what your interest is, and then I think having a very clear goal in mind when you start, and
And we've had this conversation with a lot of people. Bob Edwards had the conversation with Bob Edwards as he was meeting with success very quickly. There's a lot of ways to get involved, and there's no one right way. And I think conversations like this with Joe will go a long way to helping people understand, you know, what they're getting involved in, or what they're thinking about getting involved in. We're going to talk to Tony Black and Steve Haskin and much more, Dick Powell and Rich Eng. About 15 into hour two, waiting for changes here in New York with four of the six races off the turf today. The first, the third, the fourth, and the ninth came off. The sixth and the eighth, one each on the inner course and on the Mellon. They stay on, including the New York Stallion Series. Speaking of opportunities, and this is a program specifically designed for horses that stand and that were bred with New York Stallions. And they run all year long, upstate and downstate. The Maryland Million, that's the same thing. Maryland sired, not just Maryland bred. Maryland breds, I learned that one the hard way when we had Williams Lucky Gray, and she was a Maryland bred, but not from a Maryland stallion. She was by Dunkirk. And so you initially thought, oh, okay, we can maybe angle her toward the Maryland Million race in the fall. But the Maryland breds can only get into those races if there's room after Maryland sired. There's like a second, there's like a two-tier priority. So there's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts. We'll take a timeout. Tony Black, check in with Tony. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.